session of the Senate Revenue is February 28th, the last day of February. We have today an excellent bill, Senate Bill 560. We'll have the staff present a staff measure summary, and then we will ask for testimony. And I note that the sponsor of the bill, Senator Miller, is here with us today to make the presentation. So have the staff orient our committee to the bill, and then we will proceed from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Very briefly, Senate Bill 560 repeals the political contribution income tax credit effective January 1, 2002. Under current law, taxpayers may claim up to $100 credit for contributions to qualified political candidates, political parties, or political action committees. And this bill would repeal that credit effective January 1, 2002.
Questions from the committee on the orientation?
Hearing and seeing none.
I will ask for a public hearing. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 560 and call forth Senator Miller. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Revenue Committee. For the record, State Senator Randy Miller, District 13. And I do appreciate very much the opportunity to come before this committee, having served as a member in the prior session. And it's good to see your capable staff as well, Mr. Warner, Mr.
Senator
Waters.
Senator Miller, I believe you were not merely a member of this committee in the last session. I believe you were the chair of this committee in the last session.
Well, I believe Senator Beyer, who served on that committee, thought we were leaderless, so I just thought I'd...
nobody's taking the blame now, Mr. Chair?
That's it. Anyway, I do appreciate the opportunity to be before you on Senate Bill 560. One of the difficulties of this bill is that it's so short everyone can read it, and therefore you can obviously form an opinion. And what I would say is that this bill, to me, given the budget environment we're in, is perhaps even more important, more critical than it has been in past sessions. I have before me, by way of demonstration, two important books, and I know that all members of this committee have gone through each of these thoroughly. One of them is the governor's budget. The other is one that I know is of great interest, tremendous reading, great phraseology in here, the tax expenditure report. Now, the reason I bring these two props is that some of you have heard that in this particular year there are some constraints on our ability to fund programs that many people who come to this building desire. Tell us that they're not able to do all that they think they could do to benefit Oregonians, whether it's education, the health plan, help of the environment, whatever the cause. At least as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, I've heard the traditional and standard refrain that there is not enough money to do the job. Well, for those who subscribe to that opinion, it becomes incumbent upon us, one, to appropriate the monies that we have before us wisely, and secondly, if we have the view that there is not enough to do the job adequately, then we need to look for ways to find additional revenue. And at least it's my position that before we increase taxes on any citizen of this state, we can look at ways to eliminate, in particular, certain credits that are afforded citizens of Oregon. And I will tell you that my venture into this particular proposition preceded any budgetary constraint. I have not believed for quite some time that this is wise public policy. The political tax credit, in effect, states that we believe that politicians should be prioritized in the tax code over churches, over charities, over any other cause that simply is entitled to a deduction when you contribute to that organization. But lo and behold, not us. We need to have that special provision in the tax code that says You know, you got two choices, folks, when you're going to get rid of that money. You can either give it to the Oregon Department of Revenue or to your favorite politician. Most of us probably think we can compete fairly well for the affection of the citizen with the Department of Revenue. But I don't think that's an excuse to continue this credit. Because it's been my feeling, and what's been amazing to me, Mr. Chairman and members, in past hearings on this concept, is apparently the view by some that but for the credit, I guess their cause wouldn't be able to raise the money. And I think that's a pretty pathetic view. Because can you imagine going to a service this weekend at a church or synagogue and someone saying after the sermon that, now remember, parishioners, the religious tax credit, and for those of you who haven't given this year, just remember it's essentially tax-free and that it's a credit. Well, we don't do that for them, and we shouldn't, because we hope that people would contribute based on their belief, based on the cause that was presented, and they think it would be the right thing to do. I would hope that each of us would have enough faith in our own values and desires that people would contribute to campaigns, whether it's for us or political causes, because they believe in it. The other thing I noted, which is quite amazing to me, it is a substantial impact, according to the tax expenditure report, $8.6 million. So I want to emphasize again, Mr. Chairman, that if I hear, and I will hear, as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, that we are short money for K through 12. We're short money for higher ed, engineering programs. We're short money for the health plan. If I hear that, I got to wonder why anyone would resist this pile of money, $8.6 million, or at least stand up for the proposition that no, my political campaign is more important than K through 12. I would rather fund my campaign than some additional teachers in the classroom. That's not my view, Mr. Chairman. I hope it's not the view of the Oregon legislature any longer. And so I present this bill to you. Now, a practical concern, Mr. Chair, that I've certainly wanted to share with this committee, and you may already have received a copy of a letter from Legislative Council suggesting that this committee in the Senate cannot initiate revenue-raising measures. And this, by deleting this credit, obviously has the impact of increasing the revenues that flow into this state by $8.6 million, or so it is projected. I appreciate very much this hearing, and the recognition of that fact to me is that if, and I hope, another bill comes to you that did initiate in the House that is revenue-raising, that this idea could be coupled to a bill of that nature and therefore have the opportunity of passing through this entire process. But I'm not here to quarrel with the opinion of Legislative Council. It's probably valid. But I do appreciate the chance to air with you the concerns I have about this particular credit and what I believe is the wisdom in deleting that from the tax code. And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Be happy to accept any grilling.
Senator, I would hope that you'd be able to stay with us through the hearing. It will not be extensive. We have just a handful of folks that have signed up to offer testimony, but I would like you to remain. I would like the staff to detail for the record what is the revenue impact. And although Senator Miller is quite correct in asserting that action by this committee would, in effect, amount to a revenue-creating action, which would normally or would constitutionally be required to be carried on elsewhere. We certainly can make subsequent referral. This is a substantive-type bill. We can hear it here. So there's not a problem in terms of the venue for this hearing. But if you could just detail what the actual revenue impact is for us, we can let our colleagues know what is the revenue impact.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We estimated that the revenue impact of repealing the credit effective beginning of 2002 tax year, which is partway through the biennium, would be plus $5.5 million for the 2001-2003 biennium. If it were repealed effective January 1, 2001, the current tax year, then the impact would be closer to the full biennium revenue estimate in the tax expenditure report.
And in point of fact, I think that it would be irresponsible of us not to look at potential revenue generators from any source, given the facts that you testified to this morning, Senator Miller. If you would, I'll ask the committee if they have any questions for the good senator, and if not, I'll ask you just to remain in case the other questions do come up.
All right.
Yes, and we have yes, we have a question from Senator Muniz.
Senator Miller, when did you first introduce this process?
I think, Mr. Chairman and Senator Muniz, it's been two prior sessions, I would guess. You know, and I admit that this is the most difficult group, not this particular committee, but obviously recipients of this credit, to deny them this unique fundraising opportunity is an uphill struggle. And but that, to me, should not deter us in what I believe is the right cause.
Could I follow up? Actually, I had, in a conversation, I think you mentioned that you brought this bill first in 1986.
Have I been ineffective that long?
I don't know.
Is that 1986, Mr. Chair? Are your first terms?
So my first term was 1983.
Okay. So it's a concept we've had before us before.
Oh, yes.
Question, Senator? George?
Senator, if I were a taxpayer and I was every biennium looking at the growth of Oregon state government ranging, you know, 15% to 20%, and I was realizing that I wasn't keeping up with that, and I decided that what I needed to do, because I was being heavily taxed, is take this little tax credit and give it to a politician who might try to get those expenditures under control. Wouldn't you think that would be a good thing to do?
Mr. Chairman and Senator George, I would advocate that people contribute to causes they believe in, irrespective of the tax code. And that's just my feeling, that you should not be inhibited, or you shouldn't be, or it shouldn't be promoted in the tax code, particularly in light of other causes that are not that don't have this cherished position as a credit. That's, to me, almost embarrassing that we have to kind of stoop to that level. I agree with you that it denies certain revenues flowing into the general fund, if that is your view, that we have too much. This does take some money out of other spending opportunities. But again, I would just approach this from the point of view that if we can motivate citizens to give to the causes, in your case, that you want to support, then maybe the job ultimately gets done in a better way, and perhaps money comes back as a tax cut or a refund of some kind, rather than having to play this kind of shell game.
Further questions? Senator?
Senator, I'll take you back to your church again that you took us to a little earlier in the day, and that wonderful thick tome that you have there with you, your prop. Aren't religious facilities given a tax credit? Given that I'm really encouraged by your concern over funding for K-12 and these other programs that are going wanting, would you propose looking at other tax credits like pollution tax credit and tax credits, property tax credits that are given to folks?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Corcoran, yes, I would. I think there's a real value in the discussion over the pollution tax credit. Credits generally, and I'm not a big fan of rigging the tax code to get a certain behavior from our citizens. I would much rather that we have a far more simplistic tax code and that people could kind of contribute the way they want, and that we would set forth regulations that ought to be complied with. And I mean, there's a purpose for a credit for a time, perhaps, or at least a deduction for the expense. But credit is something I think we should all be looking at with fairly suspect eyes every session. And again, particularly and I know you will, that given the fact that some major programs are making a fairly convincing case for additional funds, this is a great place to look. And how we justify, in particular, the political tax credit in light of other needs is a mystery to me.
Other questions? Senator Miller, if you could...
be happy to, Mr. Chairman.
For further questions.
Thank you. Would thank the members of the committee.
Now, the fact is the chair recognizes this as a serious issue and a potential serious option for the co-chairs of Ways and Means, depending on what we see in the revenue projections Thursday, tomorrow, and in May. So let's approach this. We can approach this with a light heart. It's a serious issue.
Well, I just say this, Mr. Chairman, as I go and await the additional testimony, that I'm right now stepping aside from my chairing the Public Safety Subcommittee in Ways and Means as we speak. And before us this week is the state police. They are losing 96 officers that this legislature granted them last session. And I would just say, if I told them I found a pot of $8.6 million, or as Mr. Waters has corrected me, $5.5 million for the current, what we might get under this bill in the current or the future biennium, you know, maybe they'd think that they could hire a few of those officers back. It's just something for this committee to ponder, and I thank you very much.
I'd like to call forth, actually, I'd like to open the, did I already open the public hearing on this issue?
Mm-hmm. I did.
Good. Well, I guess this little bill of yours, Senator, that has been presented many times to the legislature, has created unusual and unique partnerships. I guess the it's just one of those issues that has catalyzed a lot of interest. And today, a number of people have signed up. Actually, we have several witnesses that have signed up to be active in testifying, all against the bill, as a matter of fact. But I'd like to call forward a coalition that I can refer to as God, Guns, and Guts. Gail Atterbury from the Right to Life, John Helen from the Oregon Gun Owners Association, and Mary Botkin from ASF SCME, and well, I'll let the panel sort out who's got his gun and who's the gut. Made the country great, didn't they?
I like to think of myself as the godless one. Maybe it's godly. Yeah, godly one.
But Mary, we all know you're packing.
Mr. Chair, because I'm on the far right, which is unusual with this group.
For the record, maybe we ought to since that's such an unusual comment, maybe we ought to identify you for the record, ma'am.
For the record, I'm Mary Botkin. I'm here representing the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. That is my paying job. My non-paying job is I'm also the Democratic National Committee Woman for Oregon. And Gail Atterbury and I really appreciate the fact that every couple of years, Senator Miller gives us the opportunity to work together. And this year, we've been joined by even more folks. You know, we've never had the gun lobby with us before, and there are people who have known me for a long time who would be surprised to see me sitting up here, not only with Gail, with Right to Life, but with the gun lobby. But this is an issue that we all agree about, and let me just say that I agree with a lot of the points that Senator Miller made. This is a tight budget cycle. We understand that. And, you know, every morning I spend with Senator Miller down in Ways and Means. And so it feels a little awkward sometimes when you're asking for tax credits at one end of the hall and budget enhancements at the other end. But the reality is that there's a lot of tax credits. And this is one that I think of as being a tax credit that kind of the little people get to take advantage of, and it's a voluntary tax credit. It gives them the opportunity to financially participate in the political process and make a financial commitment, and it gives them the opportunity to take advantage of that through some sort of subsidized program. And I think it's as close as we're going to get to any kind of public financing of political campaigns. And I know that a lot of folks have supported over the years public financing in one form or another, either through ballot measures, initiatives, or a myriad of different things. And I think that this is really one of those programs that offers people the opportunity to put their money where they think it belongs and do it in a way that enhances their ability to do that. And they can do more than they would normally do. And we have always supported the tax credit and have always opposed the repeal of that credit. And so we would respectfully oppose this bill.
Questions for Ms. Barkley? Ma'am?
Yes. My name is Gail Atterbury, and I'm more nervous than I should be for all my friends, so I do have something I'll probably read to, or I can write read off of, or which I can't read with my glasses. Oregon Right to Life is opposed to Senate Bill 560. And I think Senator Corcoran did mention other tax credits that are available in the Oregon tax system. And we all know that that tax credits philosophically are given because we want to encourage some particular activity. And that is one reason why we believe strongly in the political tax credit, because we believe it fosters and encourages an activity which is central to our government, and that is citizen involvement in government. Oregon is kind of unique in some of its ways that it does encourage citizen involvement in the political process. One, of course, is our ballot measure system, which we have maybe pros and cons to that, but we know that it makes it very easy for citizens to be involved in placing something on the ballot which they think is important. We have now our unique mail-in ballot elections, and of course now we have the political tax credit. All of these measures are meant to encourage and enable Oregonians, no matter what their lot in life is, to be engaged in the process of government if they choose to do so. And we believe that the political tax credit is unique in fostering political involvement because it allows middle and low income families a way to be involved financially in the political processes, when in most cases, because of the pressures of the income they have versus their family expenditures, they would not otherwise be allowed to participate. We believe that the political tax credit encourages interest in candidates, and we believe that the political tax credit encourages interest in politics. We also feel that the political tax credit provides balance in our system in Oregon. In an election system which I think we all recognize is heavily financed by large corporations and by a handful of extremely wealthy individuals, the political tax credit provides a balance. It allows low or middle income citizens a voice in the political process. Oregon Right to Life PAC represents thousands of individual Oregonians who agree on the life issues and have used the political tax credit to join together in order that their united voice can be heard in the political process. And we encourage you to vote no on SB 560. Thanks.
Thank you, ma'am. Any questions for Ms. Atterbury? Seeing none.
Good morning, Chair Farioli and members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Helen, and I'm the administrator of Oregon Gun Owners. Senate Bill 560 certainly is a blow to our ability to participate in the political process, and therefore the ability of average Oregonians to participate in the political process. You know, Senator Miller made a couple of comments about how it might be rather embarrassing to admit that we could not maintain the level of fundraising that we do without the tax credit. But let me give you a couple of examples. I undertook two separate prospecting campaigns in December and January of these past December and January. Two separate campaigns to people that had, for all our knowledge, had not heard from us before. One of them was for my nonprofit C4, and one of them was for my political action committee to take advantage of the tax credit. Same number of people were called over the same time period by the same company with roughly the same message, but one difference. If you give to my C4, you don't get your money back. If you give to my PAC, you get it all back in April. And I can tell you, my PAC took in a whole heck of a lot more money than my C4 did, because people understand that if you give them a reason to give above and beyond the cause will give a lot of people to give. But if you give them a financial incentive, and let's face it, with the kind of families that our groups appeal to, they're low to middle income families, and if you give them a reason that an extra incentive to give, they will do that. And it proved to be wildly successful, and it was an interesting case study for me, and not even realizing I might be able to use it as an example here today. But people are also motivated by time, and this is what I think also makes the tax credit unique in how it's appealing to the average Oregonian to be able to give. If I send out a fundraiser in July that says, give me money for my PAC, and I say whatever reason I need you to give it to me, and I use the tax credit, and then I turn around and do it in mid-November when the December 31st deadline is fast approaching, and I put in a December 31st deadline, and people realize that they're going to get their money back in 2, 3, 4 months, it's wildly successful again versus doing it in July. So there is a definite incentive for the average Oregonian to participate in the political process. In addition, I'd just like to echo what Mary and Gail have both said, which is that we are encouraging political activism. And if it takes financial incentive to encourage Oregonians to get involved in the political process for $8.6 million, I think that's a pretty small price to pay. Compared with the other tax credits that might be out there for your hunting, I would certainly advocate that encouraging political involvement in Oregon's election system is something that we should wholeheartedly encourage and endorse. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for the panel? Hearing and seeing none, I would also ask you to remain if there are further questions. Mr. Burke? Richard Burke? Good morning, sir.
Morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Richard Burke, and I'm the legislative assistant for Senator George, but I want it on the record that I haven't gone over my testimony with Senator George, so I'm speaking as a private individual, not as an official representative of the office. I come to you as somebody who ran for governor in 1998 and did not accept the political tax credit. So I'm not going to be pleading need today. Instead, I'm going to take a more philosophical stance. I saw the report, the tax expenditure report. If you believe that the income tax is a confiscatory way to raise money, if you believe it is money collected by force, I think you could take that report and retitle it, The Stuff We Didn't Steal. Because everything that's in that report is something that we didn't take people's money for. And every tax credit we take out is a new tax. And it's worse than a new tax because it's not broad-based, because it's targeted. It doesn't get a lot of publicity. So it's kind of a stealth tax. And I think that this is simply wrong. If the state truly needs more money, raise taxes. You know, but I think going underground like this isn't the most intellectually honest way to do it. I don't say this. I understand people who believe this is a good idea are acting with the best intentions, and I don't mean to besmirch them in that regard whatsoever. But I think that this is going to hurt a lot of people. I think that one of the persons who spoke before me mentioned that this provides poor or middle-class people with a way to testify. Some will say if they care about a cause, they'll give. But not everyone has the resources to do that. And by letting them, if not keep their own money, self-direct it, they have ability to compensate for an occasional Mark Hemstreet or Lauren Parks, who I think are well within their rights to contribute what they contribute to things. I think it also sends a bad message to the electorate. We're now going to discourage people who participated before from participating now. And there are already few people who participate actively in the political process. And I would think that's something we want more of, not less of. And also, there are certain traditions that Oregonians have that we agree to pay for just because we believe they're important, like the voter's pamphlet statement. That costs a lot of money. The fees that you take in for the voter's pamphlet statement don't begin to cover the printing and mailing costs, but it's something we do because it's right, and Oregonians need that. The petition process is also very expensive. This is another one of those things. This is the way we tell our citizens that even if you don't have a lot of money, this is a way you can participate in the process. And I don't think it would behoove anyone to take that away. And finally, I guess I'd like to point out that there are some realities in the current budget. The all funds, I might be slightly off on these numbers, but the all funds budget has gone from, I think, $29 billion to $33 billion. General fund budget is going from $12.5 billion from $10.5 billion. K-12 spending is up, I think, $400 million. So there is more money going to these things, even with this tax credit. And I would argue that if we want to save money, there are a lot of other places we could do it. For example, one of the things that I've talked about with a couple members in this committee relates to the OLCC and some of the inefficiencies that exist there. Or the Department of Economic Development. There are some places where the Oregon Economic Development acts, where we might ask ourselves, why are they better than the market to bring about economic development? I would suggest that if you really need $8.6 million, that there are a lot of other places to get it than from middle class and poor Oregonians who just want to participate in the political process. So that's my testimony, and I thank you very much.
Questions for Mr. Burke? Senator?
Mr. Burke, I'm kind of surprised you don't feel the compulsion to follow the mantra of education for education's sake and money for education's sake. Seems to be so prevalent in this building that every dime that comes into the state's general fund somehow has to be given education without justification.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, we're off the topic here, and again, I'm just speaking for myself, but I believe that just throwing money at education isn't enough. I think that it should be adequately funded. We've never really determined what is adequate funding or what the mission for the schools is. There's a lot of confusion now with the Education Act for 21st Century sort of in disarray, and we don't really know where the schools are going, and so I would suggest that in this environment that those problems need to be fixed before we start saying, well, here's more money. Not to say that I don't think schools shouldn't be adequately funded, but that's my take on it.
Other questions?
No. Just trying to throw a little incentive
in there. Thank you, Senator. Mr. Burke, thank you for your testimony. It's very eloquent. Appreciate your on the record. Your opposition to the bill is noted.
I have a lot of things to do in Senator George's office. I hope that it's all right with the chair if I go back to the office.
It's okay.
I would suggest that I defer that consideration to our good colleague, Senator George. Just direct your activities, sir.
Thank you, Mr.
I think he'd appreciate your hard work in the office. I'd like to call Steve Lanning from Oregon AFL-CIO, and if you don't mind, Tricia Smith from OSEA as a panel. And actually, I could have called Russ Walker and had the same integration as before, but let's just go ahead. Yeah.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I'm the Government Relations Specialist for Oregon School Employees Association, and I'm here to testify in respectful opposition to Senate Bill 560, but not surprising. This is a perennial bill in this body, brought to you by the good senator, and we have testified often in opposition to the bill. And I'd like to give you just a snapshot of my members who take advantage of this political tax credit. Oregon School Employees Association represents classified school employees in Oregon's K-12 Community College, ESD, Head Start, and park and recreation programs all over the state. The average income of my members is about $15,000, so these are not people who are rolling in dough. They are, however, people who are very significantly affected by the political process, both in this building and through the initiative process. Everyone has a good idea about education. Everyone has a good idea about public employees. And public employees working in education need to have an opportunity to participate with their own ideas. And the political tax credit gives them an opportunity to do that. When my members are choosing between buying milk for their family and making a political contribution, the milk wins. The only way they can participate often is if they have the opportunity to get a political tax credit equal to the amount of their contribution or a portion of their contribution. That gives them a voice in the political process, perhaps not equal to the voice of those who can afford to make contributions and not choose between milk and politics. But certainly it gives them an opportunity to participate. And in Oregon, and I think in our country, participation in the political process is what keeps us free. And it keeps us all involved in making good government and good policy. If only those who can afford to give to politics give to politics, then you will have a very skewed viewpoint of what Oregonians want from their political system. And this is one of the few ways that people like my members have to participate in the political process. So I would encourage you to hear the bill today and hear it never again. I also would suggest to you that given the limitations on revenue-raising measures, I question, again respectfully of course, whether or not it is possible for you to fold this bill into a House bill and say that it has been through the process on the House floor or in the House Revenue Committee and meet the requirements of revenue-raising measures starting in the House. So with that, I will pass the microphone off to Mr. Lanning and answer any questions, of course, that you may have. Thank you for your attention.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Lanning, and I'm with the Oregon AFL-CIO. And we're also opposed to eliminating the political tax credit in Senate Bill 560. We represent a wide range of union members, 300 different unions in all kinds of occupations and all kinds of incomes. And the political tax credit has been something that has encouraged our members to contribute to political campaigns. And I guess right now I'm especially looking at this because other committees and other bills in the House and Senate, Democrats sponsored by Democrats and Republicans, are calling for campaign finance reform to take the big special interest groups out of, or at least to limit them. And on the one hand, I understand that, but this would discourage small contributors, and it's something that everybody always says is a good thing when it comes to political fundraising, is encouraging the small contributors. So we see this is something that's definitely get in the way of the small contributions and would probably limit them. And so we're opposed to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions for the panel? Hearing and seeing none. Thank you, Mayor. Finally, we have Mr. Russ Walk, please.
Chairman Farioli and members of the committee, grateful for the opportunity to be able to testify on this issue.
On behalf of who?
Citizens for Sound Economy, my name is Russ Walker.
Thank you.
I'm the Oregon director. Our organization has two mantras. We want less from government, and politics goes to those that show up. And we live by those two mantras. We are a grassroots organization established in the early 80s, and we're nationwide with membership in every state in the nation. In the state of Oregon, we represent over 10,000 consumers that care deeply about tax reform, regulatory reform, and free market solutions to economic problems, and also to governmental reform and fiscal responsibility. I agree with Senator Miller on simplifying the tax code. I wish it was something we had a deep dedication to here in the state of Oregon, which I don't think it is something that we care that much about. It's one of the reasons that we favor the tax credit. We think the tax credit is provides a much needed tax break to individuals who wish to participate in it. And we're in favor of any tax relief to consumers, especially if it benefits those people who need it most. Secondly, I agree with those that came before me in saying that this bill, or the tax credit, has the effect of empowering individuals and involving them in the political process, which is very, very important to us. If individuals do not show up, whoever shows up rules the day. And typically, that is business interests and those with money and those with the power and the ability to implement that power. And that frequently goes to business interests as well as unions and other organized interests that can raise their funds in other ways. For individuals, it's sometimes difficult to part with much-needed income, especially when they live by a much lower marginal, when they have a much lower amount of money, and it's and that $50 or $100 represents a greater percentage of their total income. The tax credit allows those folks to engage in the process. What we found in our experience, being involved with the Oregon tax credit, which is something that we don't have in any other state that we operate in, is that when people donate to our organization using the Oregon tax credit, they tend to donate more than they do through direct mail to our grassroots in other states. And in addition to that, they tend to have a they tend to then play a greater role in our grassroots efforts. They tend to write more letters to the editor. They tend to show up more to testify at hearings. They tend to show up to meet with legislators. They tend to show up at town halls. They tend to go visit from Medford and places like Baker City, travel to visit with Senator Wyden's staff in Portland, Oregon. They tend to do things that they don't do when they don't donate using the political tax credit. Political tax credit gives them buy into the system. It makes them feel as though they are empowered by the system. They now have they've now made a fiscal buy-in to the process, and they tend to pay more attention to everything that goes on. They tend to track bills, tend to be more involved in the total process. So we think the political tax credit serves a number of purposes. Once again, it fills both our mantras, provides much needed tax relief, giving money back to our people, as well as helps them stay involved in the process. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Walker? Senator Miller.
More of a statement. Suggested mantra is the one that Bill Markham gave me years ago. He's representative here and asked, thank God you don't get all the government you pay for.
Other questions or comments from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Walker.
Thank you.
Senator, if I could call you back to the podium. I'd like the committee to understand that this is not merely a courtesy hearing, but that, in fact, pollution tax credits, which was part of the discussion this morning, political tax credits, which is the objective of the bill, other areas that we incent or use our tax structure to incent, enterprise zone designation, for instance, energy conservation tax credits, which this committee approved yesterday, Senate Bill 520 and 21. In addition, even the discussion of capital gains tax cuts, which were the topic of President Bush's speech yesterday before Congress, I think all deserve our consideration, and they equally affect our tax structure because they are modifications and incentives that we either add or detract, depending on which direction the leadership of the building and the process takes us. But I want to thank Senator Miller for bringing the bill. Tricia Smith testified that this is a perennial bill, but let me suggest that I'm going to not open a work session on this bill, but the bill is going to stay with the committee, and in fact, it'll be offered to the co-chairs as a potential revenue balancer if we do need such devices when we come to closure in the final reconciliation bill. So I want people to know that I'm taking the issue seriously as the chair, and I hope the committee understands that just looking at the amount of time we spent hearing the bill indicates that it is a serious consideration, like all the tax structures that we're looking at. And we may, in fact, look at a complete tax structure package in this legislative session that will be of interest to many. But in researching the history of this measure, the staff and I and some others have determined that it may, in fact, be 8th session that this committee has been hearing this bill. And as such, we thought that it would be remiss of the committee and the chair not to recognize the fact that this is quite an anniversary. That, in fact, this it represents 16 years that we've been considering the elimination of the political tax credit, and as such, Senator Miller, we thought it would be remiss of the committee and the chair not to recognize this special event for us. And so in honor of the concept, I hope we don't set off the sprinklers in the church. In honor of the concept, I have to tell you that this is, feel the love, Senator. Feel the love in this belly.
I do, Mr. Chairman. And
Senator George?
I just had to comment. I had written down here a note, and I wanted to thank the Senator for turning diversity into unity. And I've never seen the love out here amongst the
people. I have about every couple of years.
Senator, we have to say that, like President Bush, you are a uniter, not a divider.
Yeah, if I could, one point of light. Yeah, this won't go out, will it, Teddy? This is good.
Turn it upside down.
Okay. Well, I had a feeling, Mr. Chairman, that I would get my lunch here today, but I'll bring it back.
Some things just won't go out.
Representative Leonard's in my public safety ways and means. Maybe he can put it out.
Yeah.
Being a fireman.
Senator, like your bill, that scandal just won't go away either.
Thank you, Senator Everetti.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just review some of the testimony, if I might.
Yes, sir, for the record. And I hope that we can extinguish the candle before the muffin begins to burn.
The candle. Yeah. The candle. Well, Mr. Chairman, I do thank you again for having this hearing so we could hear the variety of expressions of affection. And I do apologize. The busload of supporters was apparently detained. This reminds me a little bit of a discussion that we had in this committee last year, not only on this bill, but also another bill that we entertained that had to do with removing some of those who were preferred in the tax form as groups who would qualify for the checkoff. There was just an amazing array of people who fought valiantly for their special place and didn't seem to care about those other causes that would like to be there, equally valid. But as long as they had theirs, by golly, everything else was not to be considered. We didn't care about fairness. We didn't care about other concerns. We knew that we had ours, and we were going to make the best case we could to justify it. And frankly, Ms. Chairman, on that score, I would treat everyone the same, and I would have removed each one of those preferred groups, because I find that although they are very worthy, I don't know if they can make an effective case to me that they're more worthy than every other charitable cause in this state. And Mr. Chairman, I'm reminded, and I forget what the character is in the movie Aladdin that I know we've had around our house for a long time, and there's some little parrot, I think, that I always remember this refrain. It says, "Why am I not surprised? Well, why am I not surprised that the group or the recipients of this easy hit don't want to give it up, don't want to challenge themselves, don't want to stand the test that most others have to stand, and that is to sell your group on the merits of the cause and don't rely on the tax code for a crutch?" Mr. Chairman, there's some testimony that just has to be challenged, I believe. There are some who think that the only way you can apparently make a difference in politics is with your checkbook. I think all of us here have stories of volunteers who have given incredible amounts of time, and money wasn't the issue. The people who went out there and planted the lawn signs, the people who made the phone calls, the people who were there at the meetings, who helped pass out the brochures, whatever they did, it was worth far more than a $50 tax credit. So there are many, many ways that you can contribute to a political cause or campaign without benefit of this crutch. We heard testimony that, by golly, the small contributors, this is so essential. Well, we usually hear it from people who collect from what they believe are lower income people who give it to the huge special interest where it's pooled and it is given in large chunks. You would think that the groups who supported the current credit, I guess by their testimony, they don't like that, but they participate in it. Nowhere in this very short bill will you find that contributions to campaigns are prohibited. Doesn't say that. It's absolutely allowed, it's guaranteed, and it is to be desired. And I hear from those who have been involved in campaigns. I was also chairman at one time of a Republican Party in this state. Obviously, it was utilized, but I didn't think it was the right thing. But I think we ought to get rid of it. And I'd be glad to compete with any other political party just on the basis that we'd like to invite people to join our cause and do so for the right reasons, not again because the tax code says you can get away with it essentially or blindly for free. It's not free. And for those, and the voters once again spoke loud and clear this last election, that public financing is not something they desire. Well, that's what this is. It's public financing campaigns. Who uses the credit? Most people who use this credit, by virtue of at least this report, make more than $40,000 a year, 74% of them. And how many people are we talking about? The high water mark was 5.9% of Oregonians who ever take this credit. So this isn't something that is going to devastate most people who want to be interested in politics. 94% apparently either don't know about it or don't care to use it or don't report it. Just maybe they give because they feel it's right. So, and I heard the testimony of some who said, you know, by golly, we sent out two fundraisers. One of them mentioned the tax credit, another time we didn't. And the words were, take advantage of the tax credit. Wouldn't it be better if somebody testified that people contributed because they believed in the cause rather than being motivated by something we all designed to make it so seemingly easy? But I guess what I learned also is that as I said earlier, not a big fan of rigging the tax code so that the 90 of us here can dictate behavior to our citizens, who I think can make judgments all by themselves in most cases. Mr. Chairman, are the groups that came before us that I'm going to see later on in a ways and means capacity that apparently don't care about this $8.6 million? And I guess extra officers in some cases or extra people on staff, when it comes to compare the need there that I will hear alleged, I guess there's such a strong feeling that this 8.6 million or 5.5, as Mr. Waters had pointed out, is just so valuable that I guess we can't hire those extra people. We can't pay for some of those services because we are so wed to this hit on the tax code. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I thank you for the cupcake celebration of this anniversary, and I really do. I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to this. I think it's an important issue, and I hope that, and I understood the admonition that this committee think about coupling this with another bill. I had a brief chat with your staff regarding that opportunity and at least the preliminary opinion. And I am a member of the bar, but I don't pretend to have a studied opinion on this, but I think that would probably pass muster constitutionally, but it's worth examining.
Okay. Senator, I'll just remind the committee that this issue, like the pollution tax credits, the capital gains tax credits, the enterprise zone designations, the energy tax credits, and tax restructuring, all will come into sharper focus in May. And all of those bills and all of those approaches will be considered by the revenue chairs and the co-chairs. Panel, do we have any other questions? Senator Corcoran, followed by Senator Minnis.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm reminded of another story of Bill Markham on the Rules Committee in 95 when Representative Johnston came in with a bill to make the legislature nonpartisan. And by 1995, Representative Markham was getting a little bit of hard of hearing and whispered very loudly across two people after Representative Johnston had finished his testimony and was walking out the room. He said, "Well, should we wait till he leaves the room or shoot this dog in front of him?"
That relevant to this hearing, Senator.
Shoot the cupcake.
I was going to try to be more merciful. But I, actually, a serious question, Senator. I appreciate your eloquence and your commitment to this issue, but if you apply the analysis to all of the tax credits, you know, do you agree that energy tax credits shouldn't be there to motivate people to do things that are in the interest of the state with respect to energy practices or pollution tax credits or farm worker housing credits? And I mean, if what you're saying is true, that people do things because they believe that it's the right thing to do, then we should trust industry to do the right thing without having to force them or to motivate them somehow with tax credits. I mean, is that your position, or do you have a different view as it applies to industry?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Minnis, as I said earlier, I think we should look with very suspect eyes toward any of the credits that we afford and for what length of time they've been in the tax code, because to give people a credit, I mean, really says that you're preferring this particular activity or you're going to spend money in this area in light of competing needs. And to give people money to obey the law, I think, is something that we ought to review. In this particular case, I mean, this pales in comparison to any of the other credits I've seen in terms of importance to the state of Oregon. And there is only one reason it remains in this code, and that is because we all benefit. And I mean, the 90 here and some of the other political forces all use this in that wonderful phrase on the letter. Remember, you know, it's either the Department of Revenue or me. Of course we can compete with the Department of Revenue. That doesn't make it right. But I would just say, basically, I'd love to reduce the amount of credits we have. But I understand the causes, and you have to weigh each one of those in this committee as to whether or not you're going to sustain them.
So again, I'm not doing this to chide you, but you do agree that there's a place that the legislature has in terms of providing an incentive for certain types of positive behavior, so you're not against tax credits per se.
There will be exceptions, obviously, to my Mr. Chairman and Senator Minnis, to my kind of general philosophical stance that I would wish we had a simpler tax code and people would probably have retained enough money without paying so much to the state and federal government that they could afford to operate their facilities in the appropriate way. And at the very least, a review as to whether or not it remains a credit status as a versus a deduction. But again, just focusing on the political tax credit, how we can continue to live with the notion that we somehow are to be elevated in the tax code beyond churches and charities is just a mystery to me. It's not a mystery. I think it's just a poor policy.
I think part of that mystery is solved by my own experience. When I first ran for public office, the vast majority of monies that I raised by calling people that I went to church with or that I knew in the police department and asking them if they would so graciously contribute to my campaign. And, oh, by the way, there is a tax credit. And I think it was $100 per person at the time, and there wasn't an incentive. Now, I raised all of $7,000 in 1984 to do that, to run a primary election, which was a pretty substantial task. But in this last election, where I raised primary in general, about $405,000 to get elected, spent that much to get elected to Senate, I would venture to say there's probably not $3,000 in tax credit money that came in. So there's a difference. For new candidates, people who are challenging incumbents, the tax credit's very important because they do start at that level where they're asking their friends and relatives and everybody else and their brother to try to contribute, to believe in them for a period of time. And there's a transition that occurs with the advent of being an incumbent. And that is that the political action committees and those that support my ideology tend to contribute without my asking. And there's, you know, that is important, I think, in terms of access for new candidates challenging incumbents. So I think there's another value in there.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Minnis, and I do recall, in fact, in your question about credits, you know, whether or not I would create some myself, I have advocated, and once again I advocate this year, actually, an education tax credit, because I think that's a cause that most of the people of Oregon would subscribe to. And that would have an impact on our budget, but I would tell you that I would gladly exchange the education tax credit for the political tax credit, and just because it makes for ease of collection doesn't necessarily qualify it to become I think, supportable tax policy. And I agree. I mean, if we think it's good enough for us, then I guess the question becomes to those who would just as soon be advantaged like we are, what if the churches come here? What if the educational foundations say, what's the matter with you guys? You're only giving us a deduction. We want the credit. Because it would sure help swell the plate there when we pass it around on Sundays. You say, well, no, you guys, your cause is not nearly as good as ours. I'd also say that citizens who pay no tax, they get no credit. So if we're really talking about low income and their ability to participate, this program doesn't help them one penny. So,
Senator, you are a capable senator and have presented this bill in the most eloquent manner possible. I appreciate it. Colleagues, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on this bill. I appreciate the senator taking time away from his important duties as chair of his own committee to come here and discuss this issue. I think it's an important issue. It deserves the kind of consideration that we gave it today, but also I appreciate the senator's good graces in allowing us to have some fun at his expense this morning.
Thank you.
We are in adjournment until tomorrow at 8:30.
While you were gone from your Ways and Means Committee, they built another prison.
Just a reminder for the committee, tomorrow is revenue forecast day.